Love is annihilating. I mean, if you've experienced love, you know that it turns your world upside down. It's a very powerful force. And to hold love in your heart while you're also holding the structure of a marketing campaign, very powerful combination.
You're listening to the No Labels, No Limits podcast with best-selling author Sarah Box. We focus on the mantra, no labels, no limits, no excuses. And now, without further ado, please welcome your commanding coach with plenty of chutzpah and heart, Sarah Box.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Sarah Box, your host of the No Labels, No Limits podcast, where we are on a mission to help individuals, teams, and organizations, and particularly my nonprofit pals, think outside the box, move beyond limiting beliefs, and create profound positive impacts. And we do this by sharing accomplished and inspiring guests who have challenged their own limiting labels or beliefs to pursue and accomplish personal and professional goals, sometimes one of those, sometimes both. And today we have a special guest joining us. Meet Mark Silver. Now, I'm going to tell you a little bit about him before we dive in and I get to ask him a whole bunch of questions. Mark is a dynamic entrepreneur and visionary in the realm of heart-centered business practices. So for those of you know, we do heart-centered storytelling, so I love the heart-centered business practices. For over two decades, Mark has been on a mission to heal the wounds of toxic business culture and transform entrepreneurs' approaches to their ventures. I'm really excited to learn more about that. He is driven by a deep belief that every business act can be an act of love. And he founded the Heart of Business Incorporated, God, more than two decades ago, where he pioneers the integration of spirituality with the practical aspects of small business. And if you don't know this, America runs on the back of small business. So this is super important. With his background in coaching, teaching, and spiritual healing, Mark has empowered thousands of heart-centered entrepreneurs to navigate challenges around modern business while staying true to their values. So not being pulled off their core mission in life. As designated master teacher with his Sufi lineage and a recipient of his Masters of Divinity, Mark can bring a unique blend of spiritual wisdom and practical business acumen to his work. And his weekly writings and teachings are followed by a global audience who are all seeking to get guidance and align their business endeavors with their deeper purpose. He's a fourth generation entrepreneur and he's leading his voice in heart-centered business. So with that, let's just welcome Mark officially to the podcast. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Sarah. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, as we were talking right before we hit record, I've been looking forward to this conversation because you blend all these unique aspects. Not only have you been doing your business for more than two decades, you've brought in different aspects that I think not everybody thinks about in terms of business. You know, we think about business. So, but first, I want to ask you, actually back to that work of the last two decades, how has that work transformed you personally?
It's utterly annihilated me in a good way. You know, if anyone who's done any kind of spiritual work can perhaps relate, as a Sufi, the word annihilation is one we got comfortable with. But really what I think it has done is it has me embraced this kind of alchemical mixture of humility and surrender that is just an incredibly powerful place to be standing. You know, I know that when I was younger, I had a very difficult relationship with power and strength and sovereignty in myself, and not always so sure of myself, not always, you know, able to stand up strong for what I care about and really look to other people's lead. And so to be able to really having composted a lot of that in my own process and my own healing. It's been really stunning to me how compassion and surrender and deep caring and humility actually has led to a deeper sense of strength and clarity in myself than, you know, the me of, you know, 24 years ago would have guessed. Oh, you're muted.
Ah,
there we go.
Yes. So as you say that, it makes me wonder, you know, you think about going back 20, 24 years, and if you were to meet that Mark, say you guys were out at some networking event or just having a meal together, what would be so surprising for you about where you are today? Like, would you have seen that or what might?
No, there is no way I would have ever seen where I ended up now. It's, yeah, I think that, you know, it's funny because I think that there are different ways to think about vision. And the way that it often gets used in our culture, especially in business, is thinking about visualizing the future. And I'm not so, like, that's not really my thing. Like, I don't want to try to guess at the future. I've rarely been very accurate at guessing what the future may hold. And I relate more to vision as being able to live into a reality, you know, and to be able to see, like, okay, so where am I standing and what's actually here as opposed to what I think is here? You know, there's a lot of times assumptions or beliefs or preconceived notions can cover over, you know, being able to actually see things as they are. A house we previously lived in, my home office right now is on the third floor, and I have a really nice view of woods and our orchard and et cetera. But a previous house, my office was in the basement and with some, you know, ground level windows. Those windows got really dirty. It was really hard to see through them because they would get splattered and overgrown. And I think that for me is a huge part of the work of healing, is to be able to see, well, what's actually here and what is it that we're covering our windows, covering our how we're perceiving the world in ways that's derailing us, you know, because we're reacting to what's on our heart or what's in our face rather than what's actually out there.
Yeah, and that's tough sometimes if we're not aware. Right. Because oftentimes we're just responding to our physical, the stimulus that may either have us freaking out and wanting to get into action really quick and do something when perhaps nothing's required.
Right. Right. Exactly. Exactly.
So one other question before we go into, I really do want to talk about your view on business and culture and acts of love within business. But what made you focus, or why did you choose to focus on entrepreneurs versus larger organizations or even corporations?
I grew up in small business. My grandfather was an immigrant with his family from Eastern Europe in the early part of the 20th century, in the early 1900s, Eastern European Jewish. And he eventually became a pharmacist and sold alcohol by prescription during Prohibition. It's a fun little story. And then started a store, a wine store after Prohibition. And that was the family business that I grew up in, that my parents ran. And then as I grew up into adulthood, I just saw so many people that I really admired or cared about, or friends who were they self-employed or they had tiny businesses or small businesses. And I just saw there's just something that I love about that. And larger organizations were never really anything that pulled me in the same way at that part, that time in my life. I love how close the owner can be to the full picture of the business. There's not so much removal. You're not removed by, you know, having a team of hundreds or even thousands of employees. And that kind of immediacy to me has an aliveness to it that I really enjoy.
Yeah, I agree with you. That it's a if it's healthy, it's a great family.
Yes. Yeah. Wow. Anything can be unhealthy.
I know.
And
go ahead.
Yeah. And you know, you said this earlier. You know, small business is really where innovation comes from. It's where the majority of the employees, I believe, are still in small businesses, even though large businesses, large corporations can have huge numbers of employees. It's like there's, I take a lot of my cues from the natural world. We have a few acres here in central Pennsylvania. We're trying to create a food forest. And one of the things that I love about forests and woodlands is that it's a collaborative environment. It's not a, you know, competitive environment. All the plants through their roots are in communication with each other. They're feeding each other. They're communicating. They're helping each other. And every little thing counts. And I think it's very easy for a small business to feel insignificant, but I love to see when small businesses realize how, like, the tapestry that they're part of, that they're contributing to, is actually incredibly significant, and that it's often a much healthier contribution to the local communities than a large corporation is.
Yep. I would have to agree with you. Part of it's having grown up in a small town and then moved to cities and stuff, but there is just a different, a small business, if, you know, if the people love it and enjoy it. I'm not saying this is a blanket statement.
Yeah.
If they do, or if they run whatever their business is as if it were a small business, it just has a different vibe and energy when you walk in. It feels like, oh, this feels good. People want me here. I'm not in a position.
Right, right. There's a caring that's possible.
I'm not just a transaction, even though, well, I am in some respects.
And I think that it's, you know, one of the things that I think has become so toxic in the business world is that corporations have many, like some of the larger corporations have gotten large enough that they throw their weight around and run over the desires or wishes or best interests of a local community. When a business is smaller, it needs to be in a cooperative, collaborative relationship with the community around it, because it, you know, it can't throw its weight around. And I think that's actually really healthy. Like, when we're on equal footing with each other, that's a healthier relationship than when one person or one entity has a lot of power over another entity. And small businesses, because they are based in the communities that they're in, the money that's generated stays in the community instead of getting sent, you know, like, you know, we've all seen those studies that say, like, you know, as much as 70, 60, 70, 80% of the money generated in a corporate business, in a large corporate business, multinational, gets sucked out of the local community. And that has real impacts in terms of how healthy local community can be, you know, whether the money stays there or not.
Yeah, that's the difference between a business and a part of the community. So let's talk about toxic business culture. First of all, just so we're all in the same playing field, and I'm saying we, I mean, stepping in as a surrogate for the listeners and you and I, tell me what a toxic business culture is.
So, it can look a lot of different ways. There's a lot of poisons out there in the world that can get us, not to create fear. There's a lot of good things too. So a toxic business culture is one that does more harm than good, quite frankly, you know, kind of a bottom line. And there's a lot of different ways that that can look. It can look like creating hostile environments for the employees. It can look like creating business models that take more than they give, you know, like where it's like talking before about like extracting so much money out of a community that it's, you know, that it leaves it worse off than it was. It's a lack of accountability, lack of consistent values of like there's no real ethical grounding. And so it feels like the decisions that are being made are purely like, where's the money, as opposed to you know, is there, like, are we actually doing some good here or not? Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying businesses shouldn't be profitable. I've been running our business for 23 years. We help businesses become profitable. We want businesses to be healthy. But there's a difference between healthy and greedy, you know. And when these kinds of toxicities arise in a business, it can't really function. It can't really function on a long-term basis. It's going to eventually die off because it's going to create enough harm that people abandon ship, you know. The employees leave or they start sabotaging. You know, if you're having problems with the employees acting out, look to see how the business is acting first. That started somewhere. My experience with our own team and employing people and working with other businesses that have teams is that people generally want to do the right thing. You know, people want to care. You know, my job in my business is usually getting our employees to slow down and take breaks and to not overwork themselves because they care and they want to do the right thing. That's the general baseline for humans, is that we want to care, we want to contribute, we want to help, and we want to make things better. And if that's not the case in your business, you know, in a business, then that business would be served by really looking at itself pretty closely to see, like, okay, how did we start this cycle of harm? You know, how did the company itself?
So say I came to you as a small business and said, these are the signs I'm seeing. I'm seeing X, Y, and Z. I'm seeing tension that didn't used to be there. People kind of not showing up or checking out early. Kind of possessive behavior on things, not sharing information, whatever. Where would you start with me on that, me and my team?
Yeah, so I think what we would need to do is we'd probably want to do a full assessment of the whole business. You know, what's going on here? Is the business model working? Is the marketing working? You know, what are the services? Like, I'd want to look at all the different pieces, because what often happens is that something's not working right. And this is normal. You know, it's like things don't always work ideally, you know, and it's fine. We ran an offer recently and we didn't sell nearly as much as we thought we would. And we're like, huh, let's take a look at this. And we found out what was going on. But what often happens, especially in a small business, is that the owner often has so much weight on them that they start reacting. You know, it's like overcorrecting. You know, it's like you get into if you're driving down the road and you get into a turn and you start to spin out on ice or something, and then you overcorrect and that just causes a spin and can get you into, you know, you small correction. So what's going on? Is there not enough profit? Do you not feel secure enough? Are you getting scared? Like, is the owner getting scared and starting to react out of fear? Some people, when they react out of fear, they call in more help. Other people, when they react out of fear, they clamp down and they get more controlling. Other people get rageful. You know, like, we have different ways that we act out our emotions. And rather than recognizing, like, oh, my emotions are kind of running the show, like my reactions are running the show, and I could use to get some help in finding, like, how to actually walk through this without creating a disaster, they kind of stumble forward the best way that they can. And when you get into something that's really toxic, it's usually the result of quite a long time, you know, a lot of different overcorrection over time. And so undoing those is going to, you know, take some humility. It's going to take some patience. It's going to take some, okay, so is it okay to slow down? Is it okay to really take stock of what's needed here? Is it okay to identify all the different places in the business that feel like they're rubbing, like there's some kind of friction that's not working, and not feel like you have to fix everything all at once? Can we give ourselves some time to right the ship? And that can feel really difficult, especially when you have financial pressures. And that might, you know, depending on how far down the road you've gone, there may be some drastic things that need to happen to correct it. But sometimes, you know, it's possible to catch it earlier than that and to start making corrections that are, you know, that are healthier. And I think that, you know, that's a lot of very general talk. A lot of times where it really lands and starts is that if the owner is really willing to be humble and admit to the mistakes they've made and be able to, you know, paint the picture of how they got there and take responsibility for that and not blaming. If things aren't too far gone, your teams, the team's natural desire to help will sometimes rise up. And people go, okay, thank you for saying that. We were all seeing that. Thank you for naming it. Nate, thank you for taking responsibility. How can we help? Because people don't want to lose their jobs. People want to see things get better. And but it does take that vulnerability. I say in my book, Heart-Centered Business, you know, one of the most important qualities in a business owner for success is vulnerability. And without vulnerability, it's impossible to take in new ideas. It's impossible to admit to mistakes. It's impossible to access the humility that's needed to learn and to let other people in and to let the help in to be able to correct what can be, you know, a painful situation.
Hey there, everybody. I want to take just a minute out of this episode of the No Labels, No Limits podcast to tell you that we are officially opening the Sandbox membership in September. So if you're not already on our mailing list, please click the link below to either sign up for the membership or get on the waiting list for the membership. And if you click the link, you'll find more information about what's included, what our plans are, and better yet, you'll be on early enough to help decide what is most important to you to experience in the first 3 to 6 months of the membership. So don't wait, click the link below and join us in the sandbox where fun happens. We get to do a little R&R, little learning, support one another, and really grow and expand in ourselves, in our lives, and impact the world in a profound way. So come on over, join us.
When you say vulnerability, Mark, I've spoken with folks who sometimes confuse that or conflate it with vulnerability, authenticity, which means tell all whether or not it's related to the issue at hand. Like, just like, here's everything that's going on in my life, right? May or may not have an effect on the business. It might have an effect, but it may be inappropriate. It's like oversharing.
Right. So,
how do you distinguish that for folks?
You know, it's challenging. It's not always so easy. What I like to do is I like to ask, why am I sharing this? You know, and this requires some awareness. You know, and this is why we do work at a heart level, at a spiritual level, at a, you know, just at an emotional level. Because it takes some awareness. Like, am I sharing this because I'm needing help? Or am I sharing this because I'm hoping it will be of service? If I'm needing help, like if I'm in an emotional mess and I'm needing help, then that's a clue to me that I need to lean into my circle of support, which is not my entire team. You know, my wife is a partner in the business and, you know, she's someone that I can confide in. I have other confidants who aren't in my business that I can go to and say, wow, can I get a session? Can we talk through something? Can you help me like face some of my fears or some of my emotional stuff? And if I can process it on my own, then I can bring it to my team after I've processed it and say, you know what? I realized I got scared and I acted out and that was terrible. And I really don't want to do that to you. And I don't want to do that to us in the business. And this is what I want to do instead. And this is my pathway forward. And that's the difference between sharing, you know, from a place of knowledge and awareness versus going, oh my God, things are a mess. Somebody save me, you know, and asking the team to be my therapist, which is not going to work out very
That's
well.
Super helpful. Well, I think just what you said, that when you said the question is to think about, am I sharing this to be of service to others or just because I need support, which as mm-hmm. the leader or owner, it's like you can get support, but it's not from your team who you need to support and lead.
Yes.
And it doesn't mean that you can't be honest if you're going through tough times to say, I'm struggling here a little bit, you guys, but I want you to know I've got my support lined up. And but let's talk about how the business is doing or how this might be affecting the business.
Yes.
So I'm going to just say something. I hope you're not offended. I doubt you will be.
It's rare. I don't know how hard you'd have to work to actually offend
me. Well, I'm thinking about going, Sarah, when was the last time you intentionally offended somebody? When was the last time you offended somebody? I'm going, I can't recall. You know, but anyway, I'm thinking about someone listening to this who's got a business and they're thinking, this sounds like a lot of kind of kumbaya stuff. How does this fit in business and profit? You know, what is the connection between doing this work and actually having a successfully run business? What would I see change for me and my team?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I want to say that there's a difference between asking that question from a place of sincerity going, huh, you know, I wonder, is there something here? It sounds weird. I am skeptical. It's great to be skeptical. You know, like I'm scared. There's lots of things I'm skeptical about. But is there an opening where you're actually curious about it? Or if somebody's like totally shut down, it goes like, forget it. You know, don't push it. Like do your thing. Like I don't have a need to convince people like that. You know, but if there's some curiosity and some openness, what I have noticed is that when I'm in reaction, I either do a whole lot of stuff, most of which, you know, like overcompensating, like I'm just doing a million things trying to control the situation, most of which is ineffective or unnecessary. You know, I think we've all heard some version of the phrase, slow down to go faster. I am constantly working with my clients to say, like, slow down, slow down, slow down. If you're going to be rushing through and you're going to miss something, you're going to miss potential miracles, you're going to miss the subtle signs, you're going to rush past them. You know, in a past career, I was a paramedic in the Bay Area in the 911 system in Oakland. And when I first got my paramedic training, I did that for quite some time till I was burnt from that. And so I'm really committed to being practical. Like I'm a hands-on person. I like doing woodworking. I want to see physical results in the businesses as well. But my paramedic instructor told us, she said, no matter how terrible the scene is, no matter what's going on, and I've been on some bad scenes, let me tell you, there's always time to check your own pulse. And that has stuck with me for many, many, many years. And if you don't have the few minutes, the 5 minutes, the 10 minutes, the 15 minutes, the hour, the day to slow down and breathe and maybe even take a nap and clear your head, to really look at what's going on and to be able to respond from a much more balanced, connected, caring place. Yeah, like you make far more messes if you don't take that time. If you don't take that time. This piece that I just talked about, like something we did with our own offer, you know, that didn't sell as well. We had run this course, we had record enrollment, and it was great, did great. And then we went into like the enrollment that led into for our learning community. And we did really well with that too. I feel really solid. And then we had a third one, a third offer that is kind of like a step down. It's like the home study version of one of our programs. Terrible. I mean, we didn't even do I guess we did like 15% of what I was hoping to do. It was terrible. And what happened was, this was less about like fear and reaction. It was more about autopilot. We were just going on autopilot, and I didn't stop to really consider what needing this. Is this being presented in a way that's useful? You know, like, I didn't really bring the level of care that I brought to the other offers. And because we just kind of went on autopilot through it, we got autopilot results. And I know for a fact, because I've done those kinds of offers many times in the past, that if we put some care and attention into it, it would have resulted in more sales. And so I don't know. Yeah. The caring.
Well, that's a big piece of wisdom, yeah. You know, to slow down. And I think we are discouraged, I would say, is the word I want to say, from doing that, because there's a sense that if I slow down, it can mean a whole bunch of things. I might lose on the competition level. Someone might outpace me. I might miss out on a great opportunity, whatever it is, right? But those are all reactive responses. And oftentimes, I mean, I did this a year and a half ago with myself. That was terrifying. I thought, what if you just slowed down? I'm thinking, no can do, right? But I realized, I said, well, then just take one thing away, little bit. And I had a coach challenge me. She says, this was 3 years ago, what does next year look like for you for any vacation time? Well, I don't know. We're caring for a failing family member in our home. I don't know that we can get away. And she goes, but you don't know that you can't. And I said, no. So when are you going to put time on your calendar? She says, well, when it gets closer. She goes, no. Before I see you next, I want you to take next year's calendar. I want you to find 6 weeks. I'm thinking, no, I was thinking 4. And she goes, right. So let's find 6. So we did that. We ended up having to forfeit a couple, partly due to weather and some other things. But had they not been on the calendar, they wouldn't have happened. But what it forced me to do was not accept that I had to be busy all the time.
Right.
And now I do that every year. And it's a lot more weeks than that. And if I don't take them, I don't take them, but they're carved out. I don't give them away. Right.
It's so important. I'll tell you, you know, a lot of times when clients come to me, first, before we can do the proactive work of developing the business, very often, first, we have to remedy depletion. And because when you're depleted, you don't have access to your creativity. You don't have access to your insights. You don't have access to so much of yourself. And remedying depletion, people come and say, hey, I want the business to grow. I want it to make more money. I want it to, you know, be more. And I say, okay, so if we're going to do that, what's your capacity? Do you have capacity? Does you or your team or the business actually have capacity for more? And so, and when they're really honest, usually they don't. And so the very first priority I often have with business owners is, how do we maintain your revenue while decreasing the work? It's not about growth. It's about maintaining while carving out space, you know, what are the different strategies we need to do to make sure that your business feels more spacious and more easy without losing ground? And
spaciousness, what a great concept in business, right?
It's so important. I mean, for myself, I maintain, basically a 4-day work week. My wife and I tend to have a meeting Friday mornings that's, isn't really a working meeting. It's more about like checking in and insight. And, you know, I'm lucky enough to be in partnership with my wife in this. But, for 4 days a week. And because our kids are teenagers, I tend to stop work in the mid-afternoon. You know, I'm not working 40 hours a week. I'm probably working 30 hours a week. And I find that even if I pour on more hours, I'm not more productive. I don't get more done. I just spin more. And, you know, they've done all these productivity studies that especially when you're doing creative work or thinking work, but even just regular manual labor gets more dangerous if you're, you know, more accidents happen, more mistakes happen. There's not a lot of additional productivity gained after a 30 or 35 hour work week. And it's really, you know, that's heresy in a lot of US, you know, working environments. But in Europe and in other countries, they've found that, yeah, it's like we're destroying our, our life quality for nothing. We're like for no gains.
There's no gain from it.
There's no gain from it. And, you know, I'd much rather have people be happy. You know, when our people are happy, when our team is happy, when our clients are happy and their teams are happy, their businesses do better because their people are proactive. You know, you don't have to babysit them. You don't have to, you know, push them. They're eager to get things done and they're proactive in how they think about things.
I'd like to ask you to talk a little bit about every act of business as an act of love. So What does that mean? What does it look like? And how do we do it?
My experience in this world of ours is that love is the foundation of everything. That we come from love and we return to love. And that my most happiest and most productive and most engaged and most worthwhile moments in life, love was involved. Love for me is this quality of deep caring. It can look a lot of different, there's a lot of different versions of love. You know, as a Sufi Muslim, Sufism is about how do we access love in every moment of life, you know, even in really difficult situations. If I can have my heart be full of love, be remembering that love is available. You know, one of the questions we teach our clients to ask is like in a difficult situation, can you ask the question, is love available even here? And when you pause and ask that question, miracles happen. So what does that look like? Let's take and sales and things like that. And so let's talk about marketing for a second. If someone's going into marketing and they're coming from a place of fear, and fear and love are not the opposite, like that's fear is not the opposite of love. Fear is you know how when we get thirsty, we feel that thirst in our throat. When we get hungry, we feel that feeling of hunger. Fear is that feeling of thirst in our heart, that our heart is thirsty for something. And in love is often what we need to drink in. And when we're approaching our marketing and, you know, so I was working with a client and they were wanting to, you know, promote one of their offers out to their market. And they, you know, we start talking strategy and what to do and how to do it. And I could feel them in the conversation and, you know, they're getting amped up. They're getting nervous. Is this going to work? What do I say? You know, and you go into like, okay, so how do I market this so that people are going to do the right thing and they're going to respond and they're going to buy? And there was this quality of like trying to take that was coming in. It was this contraction. It was this tight feeling. And I said, let's just stop. Is love available even here? What would it look like if this marketing was based in love? If your acts of marketing were acts of love? And it just stopped and they kind of rocked back and they felt into it and they're like, what they do in their business, they really care. They care about their clients. They care the things that they do. And they could sense into that feeling of, oh, I just want to get the help to the people. I just want to get to the help, our offer to the people who need it. I don't want people to buy it who don't need it. I want people to feel like they feel safe enough to buy from us. And it just changed the energy, and it changed the words they were choosing, and it changed some of the strategies. The core strategies were kind of the same structurally, but the way that they were doing them, the quality they were bringing to them, the voice and the thought and the words that were coming out were just so much, there was care there. And to be receiving that kind of marketing, you can feel that. You know, their clients can feel that and can respond to that. And it made the act of doing the marketing way more pleasurable. You know, they actually enjoyed being involved in the marketing of this offer. And, you know, a lot of times people avoid marketing, or they do the minimum, or, you know, like shy away from it because there's all kinds of feelings about marketing, or they get into like the push energy. But when you're in this enjoyable place, it's like, yeah, let's have fun with this. Let's, you know, it just, it changed everything about it. And it was successful. It was successful. And it wasn't about, you know, this kind of saccharine idea of what love is, you know, that's like, oh yeah, it's just going to be flighty and we're just going to love everybody and everything's going to be, you know, love is annihilating. I mean, if you've experienced love, you know that it turns your world upside down. It's a very powerful force. And to hold love in your heart while you're also holding the structure of a marketing campaign, very powerful combination.
As you're saying that, I'm actually applying just that feeling of holding love in your heart to different aspects of business, like doing your accounting.
Yes.
For me, it's like, okay, that's tedious. Okay. But to do it with love in my heart, you know, it feels very different, even just conceptualizing the act, you know. So I want to first just say thanks for that, because that is, there love here, and can we do this with love in our heart? What would it look like, right? And you're saying very specifically, it's not about using all this fake language or anything rah, 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 but it's like, where are we when we're doing this? Am I understanding you correctly?
Yes. Yes, it's exactly right. And, you know, the healing process of accessing love consistently in our heart, sometimes it's really easy. You know, it's like I can walk out in the woods with the dogs, or I could be hanging out with my kids or my wife, and, you know, it's, you know, or love or friends or whatever. You know, it's like there's places where it's easy to access, and there's places where it's harder. And a lot of what our work is helping people see these different aspects of business. You know, we teach a course, The Heart of Money and Power. It's like, how do you relate to money, you know, with love? And how do you, you know, we teach, you know, our next course that we're going to be teaching soon is sacred selling. Like, how do you approach the sales conversation, not from a place of manipulation, trying to get people to buy, but from a place of deep care and love? When we bring that, just like you said, to every aspect of our business, everything can change. And it does take some work. It takes some internal work. It can take some healing. You know, this is a lot of what we do with clients, in addition to like very practical strategy and, you know, the structures and the pieces that we put in, you know, about what's the business model, what's the marketing model, what's the messaging, you know, all of these pieces. But we also want people to really be able to consistently remember the presence of love, even when it's really difficult. And that's what we teach our clients to do. And sometimes our clients come into our programs or come into working with us, you know, like, all right, we're going to just bust it out. We're going to just go full throttle. I'm ready to go. Like, let's get this going. And some people are like that. Some people, they're ready. They're in a position to do that, and they get running. Other people are surprised to find themselves slowing down and doing things much more slowly, but from this place of healing and love that turns their business into something they didn't even imagine it could be, something that is really beautiful, and that they actually, they love their business. And the business starts to work in very organic ways. They start to feel the strength and the permission to shift how they do business so that it really lines up with who they are and who their team is, rather than trying to force it.
And isn't that really, for anybody who's been in a position where you are not like square peg, round hole, when you can be where you are doing work that matters, that you feel good about it, that you can feel love, you just are not so depleted at the end of the day or the end of a month. It's kind of like, that was great. What a great day.
Yes. Yes.
Day. Can't wait to do it again.
Exactly.
Yeah. So before we wrap this up, I want to spend a little bit of time talking about the book. You know, you released it at the end of last year.
Right, yeah. In October. Bloop.
Okay, so I want you to talk a little bit about it, but you've been on a run, right? We were talking about how you're constantly, like, there's this whole promotion piece of it that authors go through. It's not a cakewalk by any means. So talk about the book, why you decided to write it, and what your hopes for it are, Mark.
Yeah, thank you. So I just want to say that although I have done a tremendous amount of writing in my life, written a lot of things in our business, written a tremendous amount of content, I wasn't really looking to publish a book. Someone came into our community who worked for this publisher who also had their own business and said, they were just really impressed by what was happening for them. And they said, you have to write a book for us. So it was a sense of kismet. It was like, I felt the guidance in my heart, like, oh, okay, I think it's now time to write this book. I'm supposed to write this. Cause there'd been times before I'd say, I should write a book, or people say you should write a book. And I just couldn't feel it. I wasn't going to move forward with it just because of that. And so, I wrote the book because I wanted to have this. I want, you know, the subtitle, Heart-Centered Business, Healing from Toxic Business Culture so Your Small Business Can Thrive. What I've seen, you know, we've worked with well over 4,500 business owners over the last 23 years. We've done a lot. We've worked with a lot of people, some in group programs, some individually, but it's a lot. And the thing that I see people stop with the most is that because people have such a strong sense of ethics and such a strong sense of caring, is that they will not do something that betrays their values and their businesses struggle. And I wanted to give them something that I had not seen in the marketplace. I had not seen these teachings out like this that says, how do you have not just what do you do to make your business work, but how do you have a healthy relationship with business in general and with your business in particular? How do you have a healthy relationship with developing a business? And so this book does two things. It shows you how to have a healthy relationship with business, and it shows you the topography of business development. I have a model that we observed and then fleshed out over years of the four stages of business development, three journeys of marketing, and how that helps you develop a business without being overwhelmed because you understand the stages that it unfolds in. And I wanted most of all for people to trust themselves. You know, the way the book starts out, it says, if you have issues with business, I don't want you to get over those issues. Those are wisdom. Their business has been done in some really terrible ways. And we don't want you to lose that sense of a North Star, of your ethics in doing your own business. We don't want you to trample over your own heart in doing business. We want you to preserve that. But we also want you to lean in with some discernment and ask this question: is love available even here? Is there a pathway through that is not toxic, that is not terrible, that does have love in it? Can you develop a business, you know, without either having to push through and harming yourself, or without turning away entirely and turning your back on really critical parts of your business that need you to show up for it if it's going to be healthy? You're muted.
So you have a free gift for our listeners, right? Related to your book.
Yes.
I didn't want to stump you there. I'm thinking, okay, I'll tell you the free gift I'd like.
Yes. Yes. So if you go to our website, heartofbusiness.com, on the homepage, if you scroll down, you can download the first chapter of the book, which I think is it's a great way to kind of get a sense of like, do you even like it? Like, you may like what I'm saying, but does it make sense? Like, you know, you read a chapter of a book and you go, okay, this makes sense, and you get the book and take the next step. If you go deeper into the website, there's a free stuff page, and on there is an assessment. And you can take the free assessment, answering the questions about your own business and see what stage is your business in, and what do you need to focus on. And that will give you a tremendous amount of insight into not only understanding the topography of how a business develops, but one of the gifts of having an assessment is then you know where to focus and what you can safely put off for later. Because the part of what can be so overwhelming is thinking you need to do everything all at once, and that's impossible. But if you know what stage you're in and you know what to focus on, then you can put your attention there and safely let other things be on the back burner till you get to them.
Well, and sometimes when we think we have to do everything at once, we forget that there's often a domino effect. So if we fix this one thing, it's going to start self-correcting some of the other.
That's exactly true. Yes.
We can take a breath, focus on the nearest best priority to get us to where we need to be in our development, in alignment with our heart and who we are. I know it can be very compelling to want to fix everything. Okay, we'll take care of this, and this. And it's like, just start with one.
Start
with one.
Others
may go away and not even be as important once you get the first one under your belt. So
there is something to be said with the strategy of benign neglect. It's more effective than we think sometimes.
I know. Well, people make a big deal out of things like, oh, this is urgent. It has to happen now. And then, I bet if you came back to me in 3 days, it wouldn't be.
It's so true. This is one of the gifts of being a paramedic, is really having in my bones the difference between something that's really urgent and something that can wait. You know, everybody's got all their limbs, everybody's breathing. I think we can slow down here. It's all right, you know. And
a master of discernment.
Right. It's just it's important that, you know, like, not it's going to be extremely rare that anything in business is going to be urgent to the level of you have to get amped up and immediately jumping on something.
I agree with you.
Beyond rare. Yeah.
So let me ask you, Mark, is there something I should have asked you that I did not?
Oh my goodness. There's so much, you know, the world of business is so wide. It's a great question. I think that, you know, I want to return to this question of trusting ourselves. I think one of the keys in life, as well in business, is to learn to trust ourselves. But there's chapter 3 deals with this, as it says, you know, you can be trusted with your business. And it has to do with this discernment, because our initial reactions very often have wisdom in them, but not at face value. And if there's time, I'd like to tell a very short story about it. I remember when I was in my initial training with my Sufi teachers, and I was hired as faculty and co-teaching with one of the really senior teachers. And I, of course, felt insecure, you know, like, am I supposed to be here? And I had just had a lot of doubt, like, you know, did they hire the right person? Am I supposed to be here? And the teacher came to me and said, you know, I want to tell you something, like, after teaching with you, I think we absolutely made the right choice. You know, it was a hard decision, but we made the right choice, and I'm really glad you're here. And I realized that my initial reaction of, oh my goodness, am I in the right place? You know, like, I shouldn't be here. Like, there was wisdom in that. But what I missed, because the fear cut the message off, I said, oh, I shouldn't be here. And then I'm like caught in the I shouldn't be here. And I didn't ask, what's the rest of the message? What's the deeper message? What's really here? And where I shouldn't have been was in the place of self-doubt. Like I was in the wrong place, but I was in the wrong place in myself, not in the wrong place in the world. And I think that that happens a lot, that we hear a message of doubt or fear, and we react to it, and we either like push past it and go, no, I'm fine, or, oh my goodness, it means that I shouldn't do this. But what we really need to do is we need to trust these things that arise, but take time with them and listen. What's deeper here? What's really here? What am I being told? What am I being asked? What's really the message? And the more that we can start to trust ourselves at this subtle level, to the point like, oh, it's getting my attention, let me listen. It's really miraculous what we can be shown.
Okay, listeners, I'm going to leave you there. I don't think we need to add anything on to that. We're going to listen at a deeper level and not start with the self-doubt if that's the first thought that comes. So till next week, thanks for being a No Labels, No Limits podcast listener. And Mark, thank you so much for being a guest. I really appreciated your wisdom and our conversation.
And I really am grateful for the space that you held. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to the No Labels, No Limits podcast with best-selling author, change agent, and strategic business coach, Sarah Box. You can grab the show notes and find out how to work with Sarah at sarahbox.com/no-labels-no-limits-podcast. We'd love this podcast to reach as many people as possible. Please remember to rate, leave a 5-star review, and share the podcast with someone you think would get value from this conversation. Till next time, keep taking those daily action steps to align your purpose to your principles and achieve your goals in business and life.